Welcome everyone here. Good group tonight. Welcome to the Animal Services Commission. First item is roll call.
Commissioner Snappa.
Present.
Commissioner Geary.
Here.
Commissioner Blackburn.
Here.
Commissioner Taggart.
Here.
Commissioner Christopher.
Here.
And Supervisor Couch. Not here.
Not here. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes for summary proceedings from June 15th. I need either questions or someone to make a motion to approve or not.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. Thank you. By the way, everybody, please turn your electronic devices to off or mute or silent, whichever. And if I need to talk, please step out in the hallway and talk.
I mean, I turned it.
Okay. The consent agenda, there's about five items. And so if there's no conversation, I need a motion to proceed as possible.
I'll make a motion to receive the file.
Okay, we have a motion. Any second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor? Okay. Public presentations. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter not on this agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the commission. Commissioners may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. Speakers are limited to 2 minutes. So we'll start with the front row.
I knew you would.
Well, as usual,
where I start. Always the best place
to start. I'll make sure my calendar is up.
We're
going to
spread out tonight.
Yeah. Gary, will you make sure your microphone's on?
Is it not on?
I'm not sure.
I turned it on.
I'm Judy Kaufman. I live at 93312. And for those of you that don't know me from before, I've been a dog owner since I was about 12 years old. My dad was a hunter and fisherman, and I was introduced to the Weimaraner breed because one of his friends brought one back from Germany at the end of World War II. For 50 years, I've been very involved with purebred dog stuff. Confirmation showing obedience, hunting, retrieving, judging confirmation, obedience, retrieving, and feeding for several breeds besides Weimaraners. Have trained my and other people's dogs for the show breed, hunting, retrieving, and obedience. Have a total of 4 years, just 2 or 3 classes at a time, of college-level animal science. I was appointed a breeder mentor by my National Breed Club 20 years ago. I.e., people can contact me for advice on how to breed and raise pups as well as possible. I am the author of a book titled A New Owner's Guide to Weimaraners. The book eventually sold over 200,000 copies worldwide. So I'm here tonight because there seems to be 2 definitions of breeder. There are breeders, all small case, and there are breeders, all caps. A breeder, small case, has a dog and a bitch, and that's the right term, of the same breed. Does not belong to a breed-specific club. Neither dog or bitch has any titles or breed appropriate health checks. Prospective puppy buyers are not checked out. Is this the appropriate home for this breed? Are buyers getting to be able to raise and own this breed? Are they gone all day? Give the pup the cheapest dog food they can find, never do any training or vet care. Pups are sold at 6 to 8 weeks. Dogs are pack animals and should not be separated from their mother or father or litter mates until at least 12 weeks. Don't have a safe fence place for the pup dog as it grows. Is never allowed in the home. The dog is never allowed in the home, only outside, doghouse, or garage at night.
Judy.
Hands up.
Can you kind of summarize the rest of that? Because you're 2 minutes from, but I want to hear you out, but try to summarize.
I'll try to talk faster. Pups are sold for a price way below any what well-bred and well-taken care of pups are sold. A breeder. Both mother and father have acquired several titles, AKC and or breed-specific titles. They belong to their national breed club and maybe a local one if there is one in the area. Not unusual for these breeders to have spent around $25,000 on each parent for titles and health checks and care before breeding. Both dam and sire have been checked by a vet and had breed appropriate tests performed and verified. A whelping area has been set up so that dam and puppies have a safe and appropriate place of their own. Puppies and dam have the best care and nutrition until they leave for a new home. Breeder usually gives the pups starter vaccines. Pup buyer has to sign a contract that spells out their and the breeder's responsibilities. The breeder will take the pup back at any time in its life if buyers find themselves in a situation where they can't keep the dog. Breeder will stay in touch throughout the lifetime of the dog. That's the difference. When you guys pass a breeder's permit, it's not going to do anything for the people that don't belong to this.
We're aware. Okay, thank you very much. I'm glad to see you tonight. Terry or Joe? Nothing? Okay. Second? Okay. Next table? Very busy. Okay, come on.
Hello, Susie Harris, 93312. Do you need my address as well?
No, just
okay. All right. I'm a teacher for the Panama Buena Vista Union School District. I'm also involved with Emma's as rescue. Give me extra time. I'll keep talking. I know everyone here is tired. You guys are tired of hearing the complaining. We're tired of seeing dogs and cats die. We're just tired. We're tired of being out on the street, tired of feeding all the abandoned animals. So instead of complaining, I want to give a couple suggestions on some things that I've considered being in the education field. One of the things I see lacking is social media. The social media that goes out in the shelters, all of us here see it. We know what's going on. We see the problem. We see the issue. It needs to go further than that. It needs to be educated through the community. Who is better at social media than high school students? They need volunteer hours in their junior and senior year. I've already talked to some high schools, and they are on board with this, with a little more information and also approval through shelters. But going in, and they wouldn't be able to be hands-on due to liability in the high school district. But having these students, a certain set of students, maybe starting with one high school, that's going in and publishing these dogs and cats on social media, taking it back to their high school, sharing it with their friends. It goes on to their parents' friends at their work, that it just keeps escalating. So that's one idea I have, and I would want to be instrumental in helping with that if that is something that the commission is willing to look into. Another idea is fostering is not known what that is. I've worked in with a lot of different people, parents, school employees. They don't realize that they can go and foster a dog and pull it out of the shelter. We need to educate the community. So we have, every time I turn the TV on, it's clear the shelters. Every time the radio comes on, clear the shelters. Why don't we do a campaign on fostering? And we educate the community. We have over 10 companies that are involved with the Clear the Shelter. If those 10 companies knew that it was an option through applications to foster dogs, many of those employees at those places may be willing to foster a dog, pull it out of the shelter. Also, in addition to that, fosters are tired. People that aren't used to fostering. Also, we need a 24-hour hotline, volunteers, where that foster is ready to jump off the fence. We have somebody that they can call 24 hours a day for information or passing it on to somebody else that may have the answer for them, so that we don't end up with these dogs back in the shelter or out on the street.
Well, we always like suggestions, so thank you very much for your comment.
Thank you.
Okay. And we're always big on education, too. Okay. Anyone else on the second table? Okay, third table. Let's stand up so I can see. Third table, no? Okay. Fourth table. Danny's row. Come on up. We used to have a group of students from different colleges who would come in here each month, and they haven't been coming for a while, but we'd like to see. And what?
School
starts on Tuesday.
I think they would probably sign.
Yeah.
Just one of them.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Sonia Fernandez. I'm from area zip code 93313. I also have a few suggestions. I've noticed a lack of maybe Spanish advertising for the shelter. There's no posts in Spanish on social media. There's no posts about spay neuter clinics, vaccination clinics. I even went to the shelter today. I was told that there was literature at the shelter in the lobby. There was one poster, maybe 11 by 14 in Spanish. That's it. There's nothing else in Spanish. A lot of the Spanish community don't know the shelters even exist. So if they lose a dog, they don't know that there's a shelter that they could go look for their dog at. They don't know that instead of getting a dog from some random person on the internet, they can go to the shelter. They don't even know where they're at. So just more education for the Spanish-speaking community is what I suggest. More advertisement for the Spanish-speaking community, I think that would help a lot. You can't blame them for not doing what they're supposed to do if they don't know or have the resources to do it.
That's a great suggestion.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, is it
the, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, Nick, do we have someone on staff at the shelter that is able to translate the memos, social media, things that we put out? Because I Yesenia, thank you so much for that suggestion, because I think just in general, municipalities all over the Central Valley are like dropping the ball when it comes to Spanish outreach, when it comes to making sure that we have a lot of resources available in Spanish. And so I was just wondering, is there anyone on staff that is already assigned to translate things into Spanish, or is that something that can happen?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yeah, and admittedly, a lot of our documents, especially the documents in the shelter environment, we do not have. And Yesenia brought up a good point. We do not have Spanish translated. A lot of the spay-neutered advertisements that we have, they're in Spanish. But as far as resources like the pet food program and the licensing, docu-pet information is not available in Spanish. I do know that, you know, a lot of our social media content, you know, we depend on the ability for folks to translate through their browser. We just, in the past 3 months, developed a relationship with three local Spanish radio stations. And if you listen to them, we've been advertising spay-neuter clinics, vaccination clinics, and we'll be out on next Friday to talk about responsible pet ownership.
Is La Capacina one of
those
radio stations?
Radio Lobo, I believe.
Okay.
But there's three separate stations,
right,
that record out of one location. And we're sending a staff member over there to have a long form PSA, which is about 15 to 20 minutes that they run on Sundays, mm-hmm, and then short 15 second PSAs that they run periodically throughout the day. And then their DJs also run those PSAs,
right,
too.
I know some folks got La Capacina/Forge. 103.9. I think the La Capacina station is like 99.5. but if there's more that we want to get out to, I can make it.
That may be one of the stations. I would look towards somebody in the audience who can help me, but I won't. But I do know that it is one of the more popular local stations,
gotcha.
If not several of them.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. What about that? Table 4, was it? Please come up.
Hello, my name is Melissa Hutton. I'm from the 9th region here in Ontario, or is it co-director? I'm part of the RAD group, Rescuing Abandoned Dogs here in Bakersfield. What I have seen in the last 2 months is appalling. I feel like I'm living in a third world country, honestly. I see the number of euthanasias that go through, and I know that each one costs money. Why can't you take that money that you spend on the euthanasia and boarding those dogs and put it more into fees for spay and neuter that are reasonably priced or free? Our biggest problem is spay and neuter. It's the pet population and irresponsible people.
No. Sure.
So if the people don't know, and that's an education thing, that's pretty much up to you all to get the word out there. Like Yesenia said, also in Spanish. Many of the dogs that we've picked up are in highly Hispanic areas that are in farming areas, and there are dozens and dozens and dozens of them. Flea infested, tick infested, and I have been told by the people that they call animal control, nobody comes out. They've tried to take them in, they won't let them in. Another thing is, you don't answer your phone calls. So you may have a staffing problem, which most people do right now, but it might be something to address so that you can present yourself as an all-embracing part of the community that loves dogs and cats rather than looks at a way to get rid of the shelters. Certainly, you have the ability to add to the building you have temporary shelters. My God, the pandemic showed us that. Large tents.
Okay, when you said that they don't let them into the shelter, can you give me some idea what that means?
Owner surrenders? They won't get owner surrenders because they are considered helped out in certain areas, and these people are trying to take care of them. We go and feed them so that they don't die until we can get them to a safe place.
The shelter does take the strays.
Yes, but if you're full, they don't. So what I'm saying is, if you don't have room, what about if you recommend a temporary building, a tent, with enclosures for the dogs? I mean, like I said, we did it all through the pandemic.
I don't believe there's room to put up a tent. Not at the current facility. Have you been in back?
I have not been.
Yeah, it's there's several buildings.
Several.
All the way to the back.
Okay.
And the rest is just very little parking. Maybe come in and do a tour.
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Yeah, just so you can see. And then as far as I know, the spay and neuter advertisements are in both languages. And they are low cost or no cost. So,
are they all the days that people are going to go?
They're all over the board. Are they usually on weekends?
We are completely dependent on the schedule of the veterinarians that are available. So they only do clinics Monday through Friday.
Which most veterinarians are open Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you for your comments. Those are really good. Okay. Next, come on up, please.
My name is Cheryl, 96307. Of course, we all still know the need for neuter. Overpopulation, more dogs going in shelter, which means more dogs being euthanized because there's nowhere for the dogs to go. And I know they're full. My concern at this moment is, I know that the shelter's overworked, but I have a huge concern for the animals that are actually at the shelter. You can't get through on the phones. There's, if you ask for help, or I've actually gone in there and there's nobody at the counter. And then when there was somebody at the counter, there was one person at the counter. There's a line out the door. If there's that few people to help us people, what's happening with the dogs? If you do go back, well, you know, I know there's dogs that are in the isolation kennel. Do they get out for over a month? No. Do they get walked? No. Why? Because they're short staffed. I don't know what the answer is. I think maybe if something was put on the social media saying, hey, we need volunteers to walk these dogs, get them out, because I just don't think it's fair to the animals. You know, they're getting put in the isolation kennel or wherever they're being put. They're stuck in there, and then they're killed. They might get a rescue, and I know the percentage is 65%, which is still kind of a horrifying number. But the ones that are still there, so that the last part of their life, they're sitting in this kennel. They cannot get out because nobody can help you because we're understaffed. If you call for help, if you call for animal control, there's a dog on the side of the freeway, which we've done. Sorry, we're understaffed. That's all we hear. And I don't know about how you do that with funding or whatever. I don't, that's not my area. I just know that something has to change. They need more help at that facility. People, money, something to help you out.
Thank you. Right, volunteers are the backbone of any organization, including this one. We probably use a lot more volunteers. So, good idea. Danny?
Daniel Literal, 93308. I wasn't really planning on saying anything, but you know, one of the things that you hear a lot in this room, and you hear, you know, when you're talking to other rescue people or do animal rescue, is how, you know, you just get to a point where you're overwhelmed and you're not seeing a difference, and it's so frustrating, and you know, time goes by, and you know, there's always these dogs in these, and there's always, you know, problems in the shelter, euthanasia, and things like that. I know there are, you know, people that do rescue here in the room that kind of tapped out and said, you know, I got to take a break, and, you know, I fall in that category as well. I definitely, you know, pull back because of how overwhelming it is. And but the thing that I hear here a lot, which is actually right about, is the need for education and public awareness of just basic, you know, just the basics of being a responsible pet owner and the services that are available. And I remember, you know, having a thought some time ago about, you know, actually there used to be a thing called the Make Kern No Kill Coalition or whatever, and it was rescue organizations that teamed up and met with, Kern County Animal Service, and I think the city shelter was involved as well, and it was just kind of like everybody getting on the same page on what they could do, and by the way, I don't have an answer here, but it's just kind of an idea starter, is, you know, if you're, let's say, an animal rescue organization, and instead of, like what I do, sometimes I'll spend 2 or 3 hours trying to get a dog. And there, you know, and that's a good thing. You know, it's important to do. And, you know, somebody's got to save that dog. And I'm looking at the dog in front of me. Instead of all the dogs that are going to be coming next week or next month or whatever. And it's like, if we can take a step back and think about making a difference for the dogs that are coming, you know, in the future. You know, what if we could all get together come up with a plan or messaging that everybody in this room could spread on their social media page, Facebook, you know, like whether it's, you know, we all share spay-neuter resources that are available all the time, you know, Critters Without Litters or the Sniff Bus or whatever. Maybe it's the importance of spay-neuter. Maybe it's a matter of getting up flyers, you know, and canvassing a neighborhood. You look on that sheet there, and it's northeast and northwest. That's where they're all coming from. So, you know, what if members of the community could, you know, look to someone or something and say, hey, here are your marching orders, and it's stuff that we all agree on. You know, maybe that way, instead of chasing all these dogs all over the place, we could just kind of get in front of it and stop it from happening. So eventually, you know, maybe we could, you know, reduce those numbers in the Northeast and Northwest so there's not so many stray dogs on the east side or in Wildale. You know, maybe if we give people the information and the education they need, maybe that may be something where maybe everybody all together could work together and make an even bigger difference. So it's just a thought.
Thanks, Dennis. That's a really good suggestion. Thank you. I'm glad you came up after all.
Okay.
Nick, wasn't there, that wasn't that long ago, Nick Kern No Kill, that campaign?
Yeah.
So I remember it.
Pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
All
right. Thank you.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Fifth row. Anybody else? Gina, you want to come up? No? Okay. Last row? Okay.
Can I? Since I did come in a little late.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll be quick.
Okay.
All right. My name is Priscilla Cervantes. Area code 93306. So, thank you, Danny. I appreciate what you just shared because I think we're all on the same page, but I don't think we're always on the same, like, you know. Yeah, I feel you. So, I had a situation the other day. I just want to share this with you because I'm trying to be more active and trying to really focus on being solution-oriented rather than pointing fingers. I'm just trying to look for a more proactive and productive way for us to do better. You know, my time is valuable, just like your guys' time is very valuable. And the type of work that we do, you know, as civilian rescuers, can be daunting. Because whatever we do, it's our time and it's our money. Rescued a dog the other day over off of Oswell and Bernard. My whole thing is, because I have enough dogs, I have to make sure that I have to set up a backup. Do I have somewhere over the stone where to go? And do we have a backup? So, got everything coordinated. We get the dog, and I have a scanner to make sure the dog does have a chip. The dog is chipped. So, automatically, we start celebrating, like, yes, we're going to reunite this dog. And, you know, it just makes my heart happy. And me and the rescue, we have a responsibility to make sure that we contact the owner. So, we did. And come to find out, we went to the property. We weren't sure. Well, actually, the rescuer did. It was Mindy Fulton. Went to the property to verify, to make sure that she was on the property, because there was no food, there was no water, and there was no shelter. And she was at the right property, because I'm a realtor. I can look at everyone's information. You know, it is what it is. And so immediately, the owner calls her and harasses her and basically tells her to get off of her property, get off of his property, that she's trespassing. The only reason she was there was to reunite the dog to his home. Well, it ends up being that, and this is an upper country club, beautiful home that's worth $600,000. I used to have the opinion that I thought it was a lower demographic, and I'm Hispanic, so I'll say it, my people. You know, I mean, it is what it is. I get into arguments all the time because I call people out. The truth is the truth. Well, the rescue calls me and asks me, she's like, Priscilla, I don't know what to do. I'm freaked out. He's threatening me. Mind you, Mindy is a former deputy. She's really good friends with Donnie Youngblood. So she calls him, and Donnie, should I be worried? Don't worry about it. It's okay. We'll figure it out. I get a hold of Officer Johnston. I basically report the fact that the dog has no food, no water. And she tells me, pretty much, Priscilla, there's nothing we can do. He says that someone's going to come and get the dog. Long story short, I make it really clear to her, and I said, if the neighbor gives me consent to make sure that the dog does have food and water, that's okay, right? And she says, absolutely. And I said, okay, I will not step foot on his property, even though I wanted to, but I didn't do it, because I know I need to cover my bases. Long story short, I get a video on Saturday that the dog is at the Animal City shelter, that he's been surrendered, that animal control did pick him up. So it has me questioning how and why. And why is there no accountability for this gentleman who happens to be a local realtor? So Ben Chidas, I will call you out because it's not good. And I don't care, like, I look at his social media, there's evidence and proof that it is his freaking dog. And this beautiful Labrador should not be wasting your guys' time, your guys' money, and vice versa. But yet, there's no accountability. So I'm very frustrated with that. And I have a that has space for this dog, that is excited to find this dog at home. So that's very frustrating. So what do I do in that type of situation? Because Officer Johnson basically told me there's absolutely nothing we can do. This happens all the time. And I absolutely do believe her. But once again, why is there no accountability?
You can talk to your community. Thank you very much for the experience.
Okay. Can I ask you a question? I just want to know that they surrendered to the city shelter. Mm-hmm. He's in the city.
Yeah.
That's
so I'm already on the list for the 10-day hold. Yeah. I was trying to get him released earlier because I have a rescue that's backing him up. Yeah. And so I have to wait for the 10 days. Yeah, then that's protocol. I get that. That's procedure. But the dog is there taking up the kennel that could be for someone else and wasting money and time with the situation that there's going to be no accountability.
But he was relinquished by his owner, correct?
He was relinquished. Well, he told Officer Johnston that he was going to have a family member go to the property to pick him up. This was not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before. So come to find out, he got out because, of course, he doesn't have food, he doesn't have water, and so the animal control picked him up.
Okay. So he wasn't surrendered by him.
But that was a quick fix.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would have been happy to take him, and I was ready.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
thank you again.
You're welcome.
Okay, we'll bring it back. That'll close out public presentations. Next item is staff announcements. Director Clinton, Director Nicole. Got two to go through, I guess.
I don't know. Was only going to cover one.
No, he's on.
Nick Cohen, Director of Kern County Animal Services. If you have questions about the June report, I can answer them. If anybody isn't aware, there was no quorum last month, so there was no meeting, although there is a report that is available. I think there's still some time there. But before I get started, Susie, will you maybe exchange contact information with me after the meeting?
Absolutely.
You mentioned some things that I could pick your brain about.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, not all of it is stuff that we can act on, but I'm always willing to, especially if it's going to improve our social media footprint. I'd like to have a conversation.
Okay.
You know, Yesenia brought up a good point about Spanish translated documents. You know, it's a continual issue with us because, and it's important to have people like Yesenia who bring it up and maybe potentially offer to be the one who translates the documents for us. We've had a long-time employee who would usually do most of our Spanish-speaking media. Actually, she's the one that's going to be doing the radio PSAs next Friday, and it happens to be her last day with us. So, you know, we'll again be in a need for somebody to translate some of our content. There was some question, and it's been mentioned a few times, phone calls, getting through to somebody at the shelter. Our office staff, we have three office staff. They're the way the county works. There's job titles and job classifications, and you get recruited and you get hired, and you're a civil servant, and you're protected by the Civil Service Commission, and you're hired to do those tasks. We do some cross-training from time to time, but we essentially have three officers that are the technicians, who are the people that, for the most part, work that front counter. And this last 2 months has been outrageously busy for those girls. Sometimes it's, to some extent, a good kind of busy. I'll touch on it in the report, but in the month of July, we processed 617 adoptions, so we've never come close to 600 adoptions. So, just, you know, the massive amount of people that were coming in to adopt animals, which is a really good problem to have, it just handcuffs our ability to answer when people call. And our voicemail system takes a max of 80 voicemails, and then that's it. You can't leave a voicemail after that. So sometimes our ladies come in Monday morning, and they have 80 voicemails, and they simply don't have the time to go through all 80. Up until about 3 weeks ago, that was the case. We have a volunteer. Her name is Vicky. And Vicky comes in Monday mornings now, and she listens to all of those 80 voicemails. sometimes in several extensions, so it's 160 or 240. And she spends her week trying to return all those calls. She has gotten through some a pretty good number of those. And then alternately, we on Friday, or Thursday, tomorrow on Friday, we have interviews to hire a fourth office services person. This is an office services assistant, and we can only afford part-time. So we're going to bring on an additional individual to lighten the load Monday through Friday so that we can potentially be able to answer those calls as they come in. I don't know how we're going to pay for that position just yet, but that's a problem that I'll deal with later. There was a question, do we have staffing problems? I can't figure out the right word, but staffing problems is not a harsh enough phrase. There are not enough resources at Kern County Animal Services to be able to handle the volume of questions, calls, adoption interests, people needing help with their own pets. We just simply don't have it. We have a volunteer corps. We have about, I think it's in here, I think 60 or 70 active volunteers right now. And some of those are now taking on like a greeter kind of role in the shelter to be able to answer questions and direct people to resources to those questions. And just trying to juggle all of those needs from the community and still be able to answer the calls when people call. It's a struggle. The more volunteers we have that are willing to take on the roles, the better we can do at it. Logistically, office space is a bit of an issue. Workspace is a bit of an issue. Phone systems and computers are a bit of an issue. But the more people I have to help out, the better. If you've been to the facility in the past 3 months, you'll notice two new workstations that are in the front lobby. That was the idea, is to build two workstations to have two staff members assigned there, two volunteers assigned there that can do nothing but answer questions from the public that we can't seem to answer over the phone. So we're continually working towards that. If I was to give a piece of advice right now, the best way to, especially if it's a question that isn't pressing, something like about adoption fees or a particular animal or some resource that exists and how you can take advantage of it, email is the way to go. Those emails go through our dispatch, and dispatch farms them out to the supervisors, and the supervisors can answer those emails much faster than they can trying to get through 80 voicemails. I know that's not the perfect solution, but we're working on some other solutions, but for the time being, email is the best way to go. Melissa?
Yes?
See me after the meeting, and if you'd like, I'll give you my contact information, and I'd be happy to give you a tour for the facility. Probably come with some education about some of the struggles that we have and the limitations, but I'd be happy to do that. Cheryl, you brought up staffing problems, and you wanted to know how to fix it. I'll tell you how to fix it. Volunteers is always a viable option. Volunteers, it's tough, though. With the amount of animals that we have, probably 275 animals in the shelter right now, volunteers have jobs, and they can't work 40 hours a week. They can commit to, and I'm grateful, they can commit to 2 to 4 or 6 hours a week, And so we try to cobble together enough volunteers to have some consistent, enrichment in the kennels, but it's just paid staff is hard to come by right now. But it comes down to a matter, in my opinion, of resources. Every year, I've said this before, every year there is a budget process that plays out. Our funding, the way that our department operates, the resources that we offer to the community, our tax dollars, your tax dollars, the more tax dollars that are appropriated to animal services, the more people I can bring on, the more resources I can offer. If you've been to the shelter and you see us struggling, it's because I don't have enough resources. There is a system in place where the politicians, Commissioner Sinatra's brought this up before, there is a finite amount of resources in place, a finite amount of tax dollars that come in, and they have to determine where those tax dollars are going to go. Some people are very passionate about law enforcement. I I think we all, we don't want to have our house robbed, and we don't want to have our family and friends hurt. We want law enforcement on the streets. We want fire department. We want probation. We want the district attorney's office to prosecute people when they commit crimes. So a lot of those tax dollars go towards some things like that. There's roads and there's trash and there's a piece of that pie that goes to every resource that you use. And the time that they determine those pieces of that pie is just about past. It started in June. There was more meetings in July. And there was a final meeting on August 30th. That those meetings are downstairs in the first floor in the board chambers. They're similar to this kind of meeting, but not really. You're allowed 2 minutes to speak. And you know, budget time is when the board, the politicians, and the county administrative office hears the community and hears where they want that pie divvied up and put to where. And if they don't hear enough or more than other agencies, then no more resources go to animal services. And I'm not being selfish. I'm just saying, if you care about libraries, like that's your time to go and speak to the board and say, I believe that more resources should go to libraries. You know, if you want to know how much my budget is, come and see me. You know, I'll give you my information. We can have a chat. I can tell you about what our budget is. I can tell you where it goes. I can tell you what I could be able to do if I had more budget, you know. But at the end of the day, the resources that come our way are decided in offices above. These people are volunteers. These are commissioners. They are volunteer commissioners. They do not have control in any way, shape, or form how many resources come to animal services. And neither do I, to be honest. It's the elected officials. It's your five county board members. Okay? It's good to have a relationship with them to at least know who they are. If you're a county resident, you should know who they are. If you're a city resident, you're probably going to want to know who your city council. But still, that doesn't mean if you're a city resident that you can't express your concern that you feel more resources should go to animal welfare. I think that's important. You should speak your voice. And the more resources that come to animal services, the more resources I can get to the community. And I think that's the bottom line. You know, we fail all the time as a department. We set goals and we don't achieve them, and we fail, and we've been criticized because our front office staff can sometimes be rude, and we are flawed just like anybody else. But nobody knows more, in my opinion, what this community needs than the people in this room, me included. And I can tell you that for what this community needs to even begin to turn a corner, this department doesn't nearly have enough resources. And I can to some extent, but I can't really make that happen. Only you can.
But before you leave that, August 30th, what time?
It was a 9 a.m. meeting. That's the budget. That's the final budget
that's
meeting.
Final.
Now, let me get to something else before you decide whether you want to go and disrupt things. Just to address what Danny said about Make Kern No Kill. You know, that Make Kern No Kill, this was 2017, 2018. Way back in the day, back when we were out in Mount Vernon and the county was taking in 30-some thousand animals a year and we were destroying 21,000 of those 31,000, we never realized that there was a community, you know, an animal welfare community. This was back in 2011, 2012. And we got invited to go to an adoption event in Los Angeles hosted by the Best Friends Animal Society. And what we saw is that there was a community of people that felt passionate about animals, rescues and shelters and nonprofits of all kinds, and they had all adoptable pets out there. And we realized, oh, there's like a whole collaboration here, you know? And so we started asking questions with the Best Friends people, probably 2014, 15, 16. Said, hey, how did that come together? And there was something called NKLA, No Kill Los Angeles. And I'm not saying that in any way, shape, or form, Kern County is similar to Los Angeles. It's not. Bakersfield's not Los Angeles. But some of those things that I wanted to know how they did it, you know, so we asked. And they said they just started an initiative, NKLA, and they said they brought different people together that would always be at each other's throats, rescues and nonprofits and municipal shelters, and they would always be struggling, arguing with each other. They brought them together and they said, hey, animals are dying. And they still don't like each other, as far as I know, but and they started that NKLA initiative, and they started putting on events, and they started pooling resources, and they started, you know, they weren't pulling tons of dogs and cats out of the shelters, but they were taking on community education and pooling resources to offer services to affected areas, and they were communicating with the local agencies to find out what areas were in need most. And so we tried to base this Make Kern No Kill off of that. And we needed it to be not a county thing. You know, we needed it to be all of these agencies working together towards something. You know, and it, we never trademarked the name or anything like that, but, I mean, we still have hats and little bracelets and stuff like that. You know, and I'm happy to try to put on some meetings like that again. You know, if any of you want to get with me and text me, some of you have my cell phone, email me. You know, we've had meetings in the past at Brooklyn's Barbecue. We've done a few all over the place. I mean, you know, I think like Danny said, this is one of those tough nuts to crack, the problem that has been in existence here for over 100 years, and it's going to take a lot of different brains to come together and figure out how to solve it. But I'm willing to help make those meetings happen again if that's something that all y'all want to do. Big news. So at those budget hearings, I won't get into the specifics of how it happened, but if you'd like to hear the story, it's pretty interesting. You can come and talk to me after the meeting. But the Kern County has been contributing over the past 9 years since 2013, $2.2 million went to a low-income spay neuter program. It's about $250,000 a year they give to our department to operate a low-income spay neuter program. And it's usually remained pretty consistent at $250,000 a year until the year before last they bumped it up to $350,000. And then last year it was again $350,000. And August 30th, they'll make a decision based on my recommendation that number gets increased to $400,000 with a commitment from the county administrative office to cover our cost up to $500,000. So what the county is saying is that if I can spend over $400,000, that the county will cover that cost, so up to $500,000. So we're looking at $500,000 in spay neuter funding that will be decided August 30th. They will say the number $400,000, but I've got a verbal commitment that up to $500,000 will be covered. Well, they'll have to go to the board to get approval to appropriate another $100,000. But I will tell you that last year, the county administrative office contributed $350,000 in unanticipated, they appropriated $350,000, but we ended up spending over $400,000 because we dipped into a treasury, a trust fund that we. So I did spend over $400,000, so I will have no problem spending over $400,000 again. And I will have no problem spending up to $500,000. So that's good news. You know, as long as nothing happens between now and September 1st, you know, August 30th, that budget will go up, and if it goes through the way it looks like it will, you know, we'll be looking at you know, somewhere between $400,000 and $500,000 to operate spay and neuter for the community. Additionally, there is I've talked about this before. Several years back, when Governor Newsom took office, one of his many campaign promises was that he would do what he could to support the longstanding California goal, never an initiative or a mandate, it was a goal, that no adoptable animals should be used. So part of his campaign was that he would fund, develop an initiative to fund that attempt. So back in 2017, they started to think about how much money they would appropriate and how that money would get to the areas that needed the most. And his administration, because people like y'all in this room held them to that promise, So he stated that $55 million would go to animal welfare organizations in the state of California to increase the odds of getting to that goal someday of no adoptable animal being euthanized. So then the pandemic hits, and all that funding went away, and they reduced it from $55 million down to $5 million. So then they had this $5 million sort of pool of money that they wanted to develop a smaller grant program for. I'm sorry I'm getting long-winded, but it's good information, I promise. We're going somewhere good. They had a grant process. They said they'd give this money to UC Davis, the University of California Davis Extension. Davis has a program called the Correct Shelter Medicine Program. The Correct Shelter Medicine Program is probably one of the, if not one of the foremost authorities, or I don't know what the term would be, but they're a group of veterinarians that determine the best practices for animal shelters. And that $5 million given to Davis to the Correct Shelter Medicine Program to start a grant to engage animal shelters in at least sharing information with Davis. And so we applied, and we were given $5,000, and we started sharing information with Davis. And then they opened up the full grant for the additional $50 million about a year ago. We applied for that grant and put together a package. I'll get to that in a second. The good news is that we've had our grant approved by the state of California and the University of California Davis Extension, and we got $200,000 that's coming to the Kern County Animal Services. The grant proposal that we put together does include some spay and neuter. I say some because we're taking a different approach than we have before. Somebody had mentioned, Danny had mentioned, that if you look at the volume of calls, most of them are in two areas. They're most densely packed areas in the county, and probably the most impoverished as well. But it's not only field service calls. The majority of animals that come to the shelter come from those areas. Not only do the majority of animals that come to the shelter, the majority of animals that die, they get killed at the shelter, come from those areas. It's obviously the need that's greatest. Those are two areas. Actually, four zip codes. 1305, 678. So we put together this grant package that included some spay and neuter that was targeted to these areas, but it also included some supportive mechanisms. By supportive, I mean trying to determine if resources could be provided to pet owners to prevent their animals from escaping, from ending up at a shelter, from producing litters, from getting ill, from being hit by a car. If that means leashes, dog houses, restraint mechanisms, fencing, those are the things that we're looking at so that we can determine, just take a shot at it and see if we gave some of these pet owners that are struggling to provide care for their animals, that maybe define animal ownership different than you or I, if we gave them supplies to better care for their pets, would that reduce the amount of animals coming into the shelters from these areas? Would that reduce the amount of calls that we're responding to in these areas? And would that reduce the amount of animals that are being killed coming from those areas? You know, we're also looking at part of this funding to help, and this is all targeted in those areas too. It's not anywhere outside of 5, 6, 7, 8, because that's where the problem is. We're also looking at part of the grant proposal was to offset some of the cost of pet deposits to help people move as long as they're within that jurisdiction. You know, we're looking at a portion of it to try and help offset the cost of veterinary care. If somebody has severe medical issues with their pet, trying to develop a voucher program to be able to offset some of the costs to help somebody keep their pet for longer. You know, we're looking at things outside the box, using this $200,000 to try and see if we invested in a particular area for a particular set of needs that has the impact that we're looking for. That program will start September 1st. The other thing that's included in that grant program also is a little bit of staffing. So we're hiring. Or hiring two full-time staff members to assign two full-time staff members to a behavior enrichment program in the animal shelter so that our animals, if it's safe to do so, will be getting out on a periodic basis, and that we're determining behavior and that we're doing behavior evaluations and that we're capturing behavior information so that we share that with adopters and rescuers to increase the odds of them staying at home when they leave. We're also developing some staff to be able to go out to community and to do adoptions in those targeted areas. And not only are we promoting spay and neuter in those areas, responsible pet ownership, but the animals that we are adopting are being adopted into those areas so that it's a spay and neuter microchipped or licensed dog that's going into those areas. So those two bits of information I think are important. You know, the more spay and neuter funding, we have some grant funding coming that we're going to do some creative things with. You know, I as we start to develop what this program will look like, you know, I'll probably present more about it here at these meetings. I'll probably give some updates on the statistics. We're going to have some stuff on our website too, so that you can see what kind of impact it's having. And I'll present those numbers here too, also to show you if it's having an impact. I don't know if it will. I hope it does. But we're going to take a stab in the dark and see what we get at it. Moving right along.
Good job.
We just so everybody knows, you know, we have vaccine clinics as often as we can. We had to cancel quite a few because the temperature was ridiculous for an extended period of time. When the temperature is over 100 degrees, we cancel our vaccination clinics. But the important thing for you all to know is if the temperature is over 100 degrees, we will cancel the clinic, and that the clinics are no longer at our facility. They're at Fruitvale Norris Park, right at the block from the shelter. We're hoping that we won't have to cancel any more clinics once we get into October, September and October. But just watch our Facebook page and our website, and we'll try to get information up there if we have to cancel it. But if it's forecasted to be over 100 degrees, we'll be canceling those clinics. Also, I wanted to, I guess, make a statement. I was going to make a recommendation to the commission, but I guess I could just do this. Some of you know, we have assigned an animal control officer to permitting, which is the commercial animal facility permit, which is the permit that someone would need to breed dogs and cats. The existing law in Kern County that requires them to obtain a permit, she's been enforcing the permits for about 4 months now. But I think it's probably appropriate for me to begin to report statistics on what she's doing at these meetings. You know, I can spit out a few things, but I think it was probably more impactful for you all to see that there is some enforcement in breeding and that what it looks like and what that's producing. What else? Mega adoption. If none of you know what mega adoption is, it's kind of in step with what we were just talking about, make her no kill. We are putting mega adoption together again. It is an adoption event that we have done in years past. We haven't since prior to COVID. And the idea is to bring all of the organizations in Kern County and beyond that shelter animals, that take in animals, that have animals in need of adoption. It's going to be at Scramwood Park. And we're looking for vendors. So if you are wanting to participate, it's been successful in the past. We've had adoptable pets out there, so the Bakersville has had adoptable pets out there. Most of the rescues have. We have Porterville Animal Control, Shafter Animal Control, Delano Animal Control. It's a good event. We're going to have it in November. I believe it's November 3rd.
Is it in here? I'm trying to find it.
It is not.
Okay. That's why I can't find it.
Yeah. November 3rd, that's right.
Yes. It's on our Facebook page for requesting vendors. You know, if you can't find it or you have questions about it, email me and I'll send you. There's a vendor application if you want to participate. But yeah, we're putting that together for November. We thought cold weather might be better than the 107 degree weather.
Nick, food vendors and just small businesses.
I had a conversation with our staff today because they're wanting to make this very large, and I think that I had to pull the reins in a bit because they're getting larger than we have the staff and capacity to be able to manage. So yes, they were inviting all kinds of vendors, even ones that had nothing to do with pet care. But they already got some food vendors on board, and if you have folks that you think would maybe fit in that niche of animal welfare, animal care, send them my way.
Where did you say that?
Scramble Park.
Scramble?
Scramble.
S-T-R-A-M-L-E-R.
The
date again, I'm sorry.
November 3rd?
Thursday?
I believe so. I will confirm that.
Okay.
And get back to you. All right, moving right along, I did want to just touch on a few statistics. Like I said, we So we had a couple of adoption events in July. Well, we had one adoption event in July. It was a Vince Fong sponsored adoption event, which he paid the adoption fees for 100 animals, and he ended up paying for 104 animals. But what turned out to be an adoption event, which we didn't intend to be an adoption event, is about a week prior, one of our staff members just took... It is alarming to us and our team to see the volume of puppies in our shelter, because there was a time, hard to believe, as recently as 2019, when I was not seeing litters and litters and litters of puppies. They would be occasional, but not like we're seeing them. And so you can imagine it's disheartening. As it is all for you, it is for us too. So we posted just that we had, you know, 90 puppies in the shelter. And the response that we got, I don't know what kind of formula Facebook uses, but that got to a lot of people because we were slammed for an entire week. And it was a good problem to have. But when we talk about being able to answer the phones, trust me, they could not answer those phones. There was a line of people out the front door pretty much consistently the entire week. And it was a good problem to have, but we were able to place 617 dogs and cats through adoption because of it. It wasn't an adoption promotion, but it kind of turned out to be one. The only other thing I want to touch on is the shameless plug for DocuPet, our county licensing mechanism. Licensing your dog. So we receive our funding from the general fund. The general fund is where most of your tax dollars go, and some of that general fund contribution is offset by our revenue, which money we're bringing in. And we really only have three streams of revenue. Adoption fees, the fees that you pay to get your dog back if it ends up in the shelter, and licensing fees. Since we're pretty much always waiving adoption fees because we don't want to euthanize dogs, we just knock that out. We're not really making any adoption fees. And since we're really not trying to keep people's dogs, we're waiving redemption fees a lot. And so our only stream of revenue was licensing. And we have a pretty paltry licensing compliance in this county. Not many people license their dogs. About 20% of pet owners license their dogs. Please license your pet if you're a county resident. It's really easy. You go to our website, click on the License My Pet link, and it'll take you right to this website called DocuPet, and they have designer tags that you can use as your dog license. That's all I got. You can answer questions about this.
Yeah, so I actually have a few questions. What's the number right now of ACWs on staff? Do you have it like off the top of your head? Sorry.
It won't be exact. I think we have 22 or 23, but we just lost 5 employees in about a 3-week time span.
How many open positions are there for ACW?
We're 5 permanent and I think 3 extra help. Well, 5 permanent, 5 extra help.
And then how many do you think you would need at the shelter in order to answer all phone calls, in order to check all the messages, basically what we've heard from folks today? What number do you think of ACWs would you need at the shelter in order to actually be able to take in the needs of the community?
Just talking about the shelter, not the services or administration?
Just the shelter right now, yeah. Just on the premise.
We would probably need another 2 full-time employees, just office services technicians, and probably another 6 permanent animal care workers. And that's just to be able to operate a behavior enrichment program on a daily basis and to be able to answer phones.
So at a total, right, like you would need to staff your entire shelter, right? But what the influx of calls that you're getting, animals you're getting, everything, what number do you think you would have to be at? Like 30, 35, what would you say? For just ACWs.
I think we have, like I said, about 24 ACWs funded right now, so we're probably about 30. But then you got office services technicians and office services assistants,
right.
So probably pushing 36.
Yeah, I'll get there. Number of ACWs.
Just keep in mind, we don't hardly have an ACW. I'm not complaining, I promise.
No, and I understand.
It's just,
there's a purpose I'm asking.
But we also have very few administrative staff. You know, it's me and it's the business manager, and that's pretty much it.
So you have two admin or three admin?
Well, we don't. We lost our deputy director. We lost our program specialist.
Oh, there's a
we lost our volunteer coordinator. We lost an RBT. We did get a veterinarian.
Right.
I'm supposed to be here tonight.
No, no, I understand. Yeah. So let me just ask, ACOs, how many do you have?
13.
And how many positions are open, funded, but not?
There's none that are funded and not filled. There's two that are unfunded.
Is Diane still?
Yeah,
she's the business manager.
Two that are unfunded and not filled. And how many do you think you need in order to serve?
There's a formula based on the amount of people that live in a county. It's 22.
So you feel that we need to be at 22, but right now we're at 13.
Based on HSUS's formula,
we're
seeing county our size with the amount of residents that are in county.
And geographic.
One per 17,000.
Geographic area speaking.
Yeah.
That goes with that too. And the number of admin, you said right now there's two on staff, but there needs to be about five or six.
Depends what you mean by admin. So we have
a
business manager and a director, and then we have a fiscal support supervisor, two fiscal support technicians, and three program technicians. We can have this conversation offline.
Well, no, I want to make sure, because I do want to have it, like, I want to get a better understanding of the number of folks that are at the shelter right now. Because when you come to lobbying, when you talk about the resources and everything, I want to know how many resources you need in order to for us to serve the community at a better capacity. And I know that it's not your fault, it's not anybody in this room's fault, right? But it's the amount of resources that you're getting right now, and I want to make sure that we can advocate for those resources. If I go on the 30th, I want to tell them exactly how many folks we need to be staffing at Fruitvo. Like, I want to be able to say that. So that's the only reason I'm asking. when you say, like...
I will say...
Yeah, go ahead.
It's not as important as that is, mm-hmm. to be able to approach the board and eloquently,
yeah.
and maybe somewhat passionately... for more resources to come to animal services. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would do it justice standing here to tell you maybe what we need.
Yeah.
That might be a conversation that we could have offline, and I could
help craft that
conversation. It depends on what we're trying to accomplish. You know, if we're just trying to take better care of the animals in the shelter and answer questions from the community, then that's a very specific answer. If we're talking about how to have more enforcement in the field and expand our enforcement capacity, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
You know, if we're talking about taking the pressure off of the director, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I want. I think that's what a lot of us want, right? I mean, I think you're getting hit by a lot of different sides. I think people are asking for a lot of things to happen that you just don't have the resources
for. Let me say, Commissioner Sinatra, it's needed. Like, what the community is asking for, they need it.
Yeah.
It's not an unreasonable ask.
And
adequate response time when there's a dog loose or when you need an officer. I don't think those are unreasonable things to ask for. I get it as much as anybody else does. There's a pie there and then everybody gets a slice. I just feel sometimes like animal welfare is more important than it gets represented. In both the city and the county.
As far as, I understand that the way that we run spay and neuter right now is, are there only vouchers that go to critters? Is that mostly like that and then SNF us and those kinds of efforts?
So we've had to pretty much, I wouldn't say scrap our voucher program, but we have really reduced the amount of resources that are applied to the voucher program has almost dried up.
Mm-hmm.
Vicky and Larry can probably attest to this, that they're incredibly busy. They can't take on any, I don't want to speak for them, but I don't know that even if I had invested more in the voucher program right now, the resources that exist in the community couldn't even support it. Most of the veterinarians do not want to take the vouchers from the county.
Nothing.
And so as the resources dried up for our voucher program, we had no choice but to look at SNPBus, which is the only mobile outfit in Kern County, and they're incredibly busy. And it's a struggle sometimes to get dates. So a lot of our spay and neuter funding is going towards mobile spay and neuter to bring it out into the areas that need it the most. Mostly the areas that I mentioned earlier, but also
remote areas in the community like Moron and, you know, Onyx, and, you know, North County, Wasco, Delano, Shafter,
yeah,
you know, McFarland, Taft, you know, we're going to be in Taft, and the demand in Taft is outrageous. You know, it's, I can't adequately describe to you the need that exists in this community from people that want to spay and neuter their pets, but they cannot get it done because they can't afford it, and there's not enough resources available for them to do it even if they could. And that's tragic.
Yeah. Those are all the questions I have, but I'll touch that.
Okay, Commissioner Gere. Commissioner Christopher.
I was in, and you know, I'm fostering a little one-eyed kitten named Popeye, and he's available for adoption. I was very impressed with the staff up front. I was greeted, my questions were answered. There's a number system, and everybody was being somewhat patient. There's people walking all over the place. I was impressed with the staff, and I was just in there as just Joe Schmo. I don't think anybody really knew who I was, and, you know, I'm undercover or anything. I liked what I saw, and I'm sure there's a lot of phone calls and things that don't get answered, but as far as the people that you have up front, good people.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Commissioner Christopher. Like I said earlier, I would be the first to tell you that we can always improve in customer service. I have heard some of the communications and transactions that happen myself, and it's not what I like to represent our department or me. We fail in that vein all the time. You know, most of the time we deal with the public cordially and everything goes well. And, you know, it doesn't always work out the way that I want it to be, our communications, you know. And I try to have those. Somebody had emailed me earlier to express a concern they heard from a community member about the way they were treated by our staff, specifically those staff at the front counter. And, you know, I can't defend our staff treating anybody rudely, especially because we have a shelter full of animals that need a home. You know, I can't alienate this person standing in front of me. And I think what we suffer from sometimes, which I guarantee you some folks in this room can identify with, is that we see the worst in society. And so it's a natural tendency to assume that the next person that comes through the door is also that way. And so it's consistently reminding them that because the last person was that, don't assume the other 10 people that are coming in off.
Right.
And, you know, it's an area that we need to improve in, and it always will be. You know.
I have good experience.
Well, you are, Commissioner.
I don't think I can do that, though. Maybe.
Four members. I've only got a couple. I'm pleased with the number of hours by the volunteers, 590. 73 new volunteers. Of course, we miss Jeff George and at the top. I mean, you were doing like 2,000 hours sometimes in a month.
Yeah, but he was also including work release and
we'll take
other work programs. I specifically told her. We did not include that.
Okay. The vet. You used to talk about how many maybe surgeries they did in a month at your location. Can you speak to how many, like ballpark, how many she, how's going with the new bed, and maybe how many surgeries are done on site?
Well, we have Dr. Eller, who's our staff veterinarian, but we also have Dr. Alvarado, who comes in on Thursdays right now, and Dr. Hanna that comes in on Fridays. I think sometimes folks don't understand, you know, spay-neuter surgery is a major surgery.
It is.
You know, I mean, maybe less so for a male cat or something like that, but it's a major internal surgery, you know. It takes more than a veterinarian. You know, you have a veterinarian, but then you have support staff. And we have two RVTs and three vet assistants. And to put them in a room and try to get them to do 30 spay and neuters, they can't. They don't have that capacity. They don't have that capability. So we've had to reduce the amount of surgeries, because it was too much of a demand on the staff to even try to get those things right. So right now, between Dr. Alvarado and Dr. Eller and Dr. Hanna, I think we're probably accomplishing about 60 to 70 spay-neuter surgeries on shelter pets a week, and we are so far behind that we're also having SNFLS come out whenever they can give us a date to do surgeries on some of those animals in our park.
It's nice to know kind of what, you know, where you are, because I think we've seen the numbers in the past, and And I didn't know what
we need to be accomplishing about 125 surgeries a week to keep up with the demand.
Okay. Last question I have, the Board of Supervisors meeting on the 30th, have you already put in for, you've already obviously put in what you need for your department. They know what it is, and it's the final meeting on the 30th. How much would it help you if a bunch of us showed up at that meeting on the 30th? Would that?
Again, I would say maybe dispassionate, focused.
Of course, yes, absolutely, and not just for animal services, whatever you
care about.
There's a lot of decisions that get made based on input from the constituents, and if they don't hear that input, then those decisions aren't made.
Right,
and then it's just me, you know.
I mean, it's not just me, but I'm the only one there saying it.
Anymore. I know.
But
I'm
not that guy that's going to get in front of the board and woe with me, you know, because there's other county department heads that are in the same position. I try to do that stuff more politically, maybe behind the scenes sometimes. sometimes I have success. If you see me at the board meetings with the pen of the week, that's not because I want to show a cute fluffy dog to the board members. Because I'm trying to get them to remember my face and maybe shove some more funding our way. But yeah, no, absolutely. Always, you know, those board meetings, especially those budget meetings, that's where decisions are made. I will say that August 30th is the final board meeting, and a lot of the decisions are already solidified. You know, there's a whole budget process that starts in June, runs through July, and ends at the end of August. But absolutely, I think it's always important for you to get 2 minutes. It's not much time, but just to speak about the importance of animal welfare and animal services, and you feel more resources need to be given to animal services to do the things that the community needs.
I think 2 minutes get your point across, so that's good. Okay, that's all the questions.
I'll call for your commission recording.
Yeah, and sometimes it can be tough to get through to county supervisors, but they have chiefs of staff, and yeah, you can always send an email. I think each of them has an email address.
Yeah.
Most of them are like District 1, District 2, District 3, or District 4 at yourcounty.com.
So I have two more questions, I'm sorry. but can you tell me, and I know this might seem a little bit off base to folks, but what's the average? I feel like you would know. If you don't, I can figure it out, I'm sure. But what's the average starting salary for these people?
$15.50. And that's because the state's minimum wage is now
15. Well, I think they're
just fine. Now, I will say, it starts, and then they get the wage
right
every year.
Yeah, of course. And then I've been hearing from folks in the community that there have been animals going out of the shelter that are unfixed. And what rate of animals go out unfixed that the county loses contact? Like, do you think that we could get a number of how many folks miss their stay appointment? Because I want to make sure that, I mean, I understand the struggle in here. I mean, we don't have resources to fix animals.
Yes.
I'm not going to say don't let dogs out that aren't fixed, but I think those are statistics that we need to pay attention to. But, like, looking at how many ACWs you have at the youth numbers right now, I mean, if you have 22 ACWs, and I know that, you know, more than the ACWs are having to do the euthanasia, but that's 8.9 canines that each ACW is euthanizing if we're looking at that number 22. In this last month, right? If you're an ACW and you're making $15.50 an hour and you're euthanizing 8 to 9 dogs every month, do you think that when folks come in to be rude to you at the counter, I don't blame your folks for feeling that way or for having a mishap every once in a while and, you know, not presenting themselves in the best way because they're struggling. And so, like, I think, like, just as a community, we also need to understand that, right? I've been out in the field, I've rescued dogs, I've done all that work as well, but I've never euthanized an animal. And I don't know how that would change me, my personality, and how I feel. And these people are making $15.50 an hour. Just for reference, just for folks to take that in when you're thinking about the struggles that people are having working in that shelter. I just want to make that a clear one.
And I don't want to give the impression that all of the people that come in are rude.
No, I don't think it's the case.
I don't think it's the case,
but I understand how people can have bad days. I have bad days, and I'm not euthanizing 8 dogs at all.
Good question. Thank you. Okay, I want to put to the group, starting with the first table, any questions on the report for this month? Joan.
I was in there a couple weeks ago, volunteering again, and I know, yeah, there was a lot of puppies. I just recently saw a news story, I think it was on CBS, a rescue in New York, and she was talking about the numbers that she was seeing, and all the puppies in particular, and she cited inflation and the fact that stay neuter clinics is shut down for the pandemic, so probably affecting Kern County even more so than New York, you think?
I think what we're seeing in Kern County is consistent with most of the other impoverished counties in the state of California. And it's not a coincidence that a lot of the animals that we're seeing coming in are, you know, less than 3 years old.
And are you
They're produced in early to mid-2021. Yeah.
And you're probably having the same problem as every other business, or every business in Kern County or the United States that can't find people to work.
That has actually improved recently. I don't know what to attribute it to, but in the past, there was a time when we couldn't get people to apply. And in the past 6 months or so, it hasn't been a problem.
Yeah.
I'm not going to quit.
Because
unemployment,
and I have a problem with
your
job.
Yeah.
I'm pretty fond of
them. They know you. They know her.
They're always nice to me, and everybody I've seen them with.
Okay, anybody else on the first table? First row, me. Okay, second row. Go ahead.
What's the cost for spaying neutering versus the cost of euthanasia? I don't know if you have that number.
I don't.
I'm just curious.
I know. I can tell you just from a veterinarian standpoint, it's about, so for a spay for a female dog that's under 70 pounds, I believe is up to about $300 now. And the cost for somebody to bring their pet in and euthanize, again, if it was a big dog like that, is probably around $100.
I think that's one of those costs that's going to probably vary wildly depending on the organization.
Well, it also depends on weight, you know, kind of how whatever that too, but it's just kind of a general.
Good question.
Yeah, I was just curious. Thank you.
I do want to let everybody know we have to be out here by 8 o'clock, so I got to kind of keep things moving. Okay, anybody else in the second row? Third row? Any questions? Okay. Fourth row? Back row, anybody else that has any questions? Director Cullen. Okay, go ahead.
I came here unprepared. I do have a question. I don't go to the shelters and get dogs there because I have cats. And I don't like to put my cat, I won't put my cats at risk. But you guys can't tell us if they're cat friendly, and I understand why, because you don't really, is there a way to, like on intake when their owner, you know, surrenders, to find out, you know, if they're cat compatible and stuff? Because I would definitely get my next dog at a shelter if I could. But I can't, my cats, all my animals are rescues, ones that I found myself. And my cats, everything. And I can't put them at risk. And you guys can't tell me if they're...
Yeah, so my answer is probably not what you want to hear, but I mean, I wouldn't... My staff would not be able to give you a categorically proven answer. I mean, they're not going to be able to tell you absolutely your cat will be fine.
And I would know that because sometimes...
We can always tell you our experience with this animal. You know, on average, dogs stay with us on average about 10 days. And that's the average. So there's more than that and there's less than that. You know, our goal is to get them out as fast as possible. We don't want to keep them for long. Because the longer they're here, the more stress they're enduring, and the weaker their immune system is. So we can only tell you what we've observed while they've been at the shelter. And I can tell you, you know, how they reacted when they were near cats, or went past another cabin. The thing you got to understand is that an animal's behavior in an animal shelter is not indicative of how it's going to behave.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. I know, like, if they're tired and they're sick, they're not interested in chasing the cats. But once they start feeling better, you know, they change because they feel better, you know. It's like people. You know, your personality changes when you're more comfortable in your environment.
So the answer is we can tell you what we have seen, but is that a guarantee that it's not going to attack your cats and do serious injury? No, not a guarantee. And I wish we could give that guarantee, but we really can't. And and my hope right now is that with developing a behavior enrichment team that we can get to know the animals a lot more than we do now to be able to translate some of the behavior characteristics that we are seeing just to increase the odds that they'll stay in their homes as well.
Are they fence jumpers? See, a lot of people, they get dogs that they're not prepared to have, you know? And like this, like right now they're breeding the miniature Australian Shepherds. They're herding dogs. They're not apartment dogs. Just like the Dalmatian crisis, when everybody's having Dalmatians and they couldn't figure out why they're running out down the street. That's what they're bred for. We have a lot of problems with that. People aren't aware of what kind of dog that they think they want.
True. Okay, back row. Dan, anything? Okay.
How do you assess the dogs when you intake them, like behavior-wise?
We don't do an initial behavior assessment on an animal coming in other than to say that dog tried to bite me. Whatever assessment we do is usually requested by a rescue organization or an adopter, or it's behavior that we're seeing on an animal that's involved in play group. So we don't usually even involve an animal in a play group until they've been at the shelter for at most 3 days, because we try to allow the animal as much time as we can to acclimate to the shelter life.
How do you determine whether they're going to be put up for adoption, like out to the public or straight to get euthanized?
Well, no animal gets taken straight to be euthanized unless they're irremediably suffering. But the decision is usually based on space, adoptability, behavior, sick or injured, the odds of the animal being adopted based on what we've known to have success with. I mean, there's a lot of conditions that we look at. And, you know, it's not always equally applied to each animal. You know, there's a lot of times when just because of space, an animal doesn't get a chance that another animal might.
Okay.
Danny,
okay. Quick question on the second row. Comment.
What happened to the program where there was an airplane that would take dogs and cats to Canada or to other states where they're wanted? Whatever happened to that?
I think it still happens.
It still happens. It's part of the program.
You still have it?
We don't have it. It was never our program. There's a couple of nonprofits that will fly animals.
Why? Have you ever thought about getting that?
Yeah, we take advantage of it when there's an opportunity. Back in June, we had 3 dogs that went on a flight to Colorado.
How many dogs?
3.
3?
These are private, small planes. You know, can't fit. I'd love to fit 60 dogs on and send them on their way. At most, we're talking 3 mediums of dogs. It's very costly to, you know, fly a handful of dogs to halfway across the country. So I wouldn't blame most of those rescue organizations for limiting the amount of trips they can make.
Okay, we're back to the head table. I need to get a motion to receive and file the director's. I'll make a motion.
Both are plus.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Next item, Commissioner announcements or reports.
Just really quick, I know we don't have a lot of time. I met
with Michelle and Sunday. They're at that table over there. And we talked a little bit about lobbying and lobbying elected officials. I'll let you all know that when I don't have my animal control commissioner hat on, I am a organizer, a political organizer, and I've done a lot of lobbying in the past. A lot of effort has gone into lobbying, and most of those efforts I lose. But it doesn't stop me from trying. And so what I want to kind of offer to folks is that if y'all want to get together, if you guys want to talk, if you ever want to, you know, express anything outside of this meeting, to me, I am available. I will give you my number, my email address. I do work a full-time job, but I work from home or at our local coffee shop. So just let me know if there's anything that you ever want to discuss, and I definitely want to help y'all be able to advocate for more resources coming to animal control. At the end of the day, we can come in here and we can talk about a lot of things, but if, unless we're getting more resources, more ACW workers, more ACOs to actually enforce the ordinances that we want to get through, we're not going to see the amount of change that I know the majority of you in this room want to see. That's all I have to say.
Okay.
Thank you.
Since we had a big discussion about staffing and possible attitudes, I ran a shelter for 20 years at a fairly well-off community. And you tend to get jaded because you see the worst of the worst of the worst. And it wasn't a county shelter. So I don't think those people would be there if they didn't care about animals. And so to say that they don't care, it's frustrating to me because I know, because I've done it. So if you could just, you know, kind of cut them a little slack at the shelter, that would be appreciated.
Good.
Okay.
Nothing.
I showed up at Critters Without Litters about a month ago with 45 cats. I thought he was going to kill me. But
how many?
45. All
Gina,
from
Gina,
the 45 cats.
I thought you said 25.
No.
Yeah, one there.
Problem.
I'm reading my own kind of brand.
Okay, to be fair, I was only almost going to kill her because what she told me was 16.
Yeah, I know.
What she said she was bringing was 16. She's saying that this
they just kept coming. I couldn't turn
just
it down.
So it was just a small variance in the overall scheduling program.
But I think
we
got
somebody else who said 10 and then brought 30, and it was kind of a thing. So
yeah. So I've got an appointment on the next day for 40. So I'm trying to tone it down a little bit. But, I'm enjoying my TNR work. I find it very rewarding, and I'm also acquiring quite a few kittens. That I'm just getting off the street, so that doesn't include all of the kittens that aren't going to be TNR that we're going to fix on our own and adopt out. And I think we've got like 40 kittens in my little system and doing well. Really trying to get as many felines off of the streets as possible. So.
Good. No, your limitations.
No,
I buy my.
We're good now.
We're working.
Yeah.
I'm a Petco quite often getting food for my cats, and so I stay in regular contact with both managers. Marlo is the manager at the store on Gosford, and I left my card just in case they ever have a question. She called me last week and talked for like 30 minutes about how interested she is in working with the county and if they don't want to do an event. And by the way, we have little cubbies there that the county's got. That's where they get to use that to try to help place some of the kittens. And the store on Rosedale Highway is Eric. He's a kind of a friend of mine. And we have that store also. And they're equally interested in doing any kind of event for the county. So that's kind of what some of the things I do. Moving right along, I'm not sure what special presentation means on this agenda.
Last month, we talked about putting the month before last. We talked about a rescue a representative coming up and talking about what's going on in the community. You guys motioned for it at the last meeting.
Okay.
To give extra time to someone.
Okay.
Do we have someone who has?
This was actually me.
Do you have the data for us on that? To make a report or not this one?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't really about the data stuff anyways, but I mean, just to kind of sum it up, I mean, we've definitely covered a lot of really nice things here tonight, and I do appreciate that there's seems to be a lot of plans in place. I mean, like, you're almost, sounds almost like you're doing more rescue work than anything. So canvassing the area and offering people, you know, solutions as far as dog houses and leashes and that kind of stuff is what we have, as rescues, have been doing for a long time, and trying to, you know, build a better dog and cat owner out there in the community, which has been very difficult, you know, and very expensive and time consuming. So I'm glad to hear that. I do have one question. I know we're almost out of time, so I don't really want to, you know, go up there and waste our time. But what should we do about the animals that are currently on the streets that ladies like Brad goes around and feeds in droves all over town, packs of dogs, that kind of stuff? What should we do about those right now? Because it sounds like you've got things in place to where, I mean, I can close my rescue with not feeling like I'm just giving up, right? I can be like, okay, like relief, a sigh of relief. Like, okay, it sounds to me like the greater organization that has the money, the backing, and, you know, the staff and that kind of stuff is able to do what they should be doing, okay? But what should we do at the ones that are currently out in the streets, that are in bad situations and running around, and we have very little, you know, resources to handle. So it's kind of more for Nick.
So my suggestion is within the county's jurisdiction, and you trap or capture the stray dog, bring it to the animal shelter.
Okay.
Or if you can find them on your property and you live in the county's jurisdiction, contact dispatch and we'll dispatch an officer to the dog.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to move on then. Old business, staff referrals done. Update on the AKC Reunite fundraising efforts. Anything new that you might be able to add to where we were a couple months ago? Anybody? No? Oh, okay. I'll take that as a no. Status on ordinance subcommittee revisions. Okay. Myself and Commissioner Christopher serve on the subcommittee, and we've had 2 1-hour meetings with Director Cullen and Jeremy McNutt in the last few weeks. We have another meeting this coming Friday at 3 o'clock, and we've covered a lot of territory, and there's some changes that we've requested on it, and I'm not sure if I can put any more detail, probably not. We're still in as a work in progress, but we've got together, we've brainstormed, we've made some changes on it. We'll probably have, hopefully, maybe something we can present at the next meeting on it. We're not ready to talk about it as far as anything definite at this point, but we've had 2 hours of pretty intense talking about this revision, this ordinance. Did you have anything that you want to add? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Nick was there. Did you want to add anything to what I just said?
Sure. I mean, a lot of it has been because Commissioner Blackburn and Commissioner Christopher were not on the subcommittee originally. Is me answering questions about what the practical application of the changes would look like.
Yeah.
And That's been the majority of what we've discussed the 2 meetings, and I suspect what we'll talk about this Friday as well. My personal opinion is that I think it's a bit of a reach to think that you'll have something back.
Maybe not.
Next meeting.
I try to be optimistic in
my
next
opinion and the piece that we're talking
about. But it won't be a year and a half.
No.
Good.
14 months.
Okay, may not have something definite next month, but I try to be optimistic on things. There's a lot going on in today's world, so we're getting through as quickly as we can.
Okay.
I just had a handout, and it was good of some conversations about code of ethics in national breed clubs, and I've got a couple printouts of it if you just need that for your revision. I got a couple copies for everybody.
I'll have to look at it, yeah.
Okay, I'll make sure that it's
okay. Cool. Thank you very much. Let's see. Well, we have no new business, so the next item is adjournment. So I need to get a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
Okay, we're adjourned.